Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
Guys, we are here today with Gary Linnemeyer. He is a retired police officer and a reoccurring guest on the show. It's been a long time since we've had you on, but thank you so much for continuing to be on the show.
Oh, I appreciate it, John. Thank you. It's been a while, but I've definitely been listening to the episode still and everything, so I'm pleased to be here.
Well, we really appreciate it. Jamie is not able to be here today. He's actually spending some time with his mother. She lives out of town and came in for the day, so he's with her today. But Gary, again, thanks, man. And we had been emailing back and forth about some pretty interesting topics. And if you have TikTok or you have any kind of social media where you're watching videos, we often see the videos of people getting stopped for some kind of traffic violation, and things can go off the rails pretty quick. Some people think they are entitled to a little bit more or have some rights that they actually may not have. So you reached out to us about that. Let's get into it, man. You've had to have seen, I don't know, when did you retire, Gary?
I retired in 2006.
So I don't know if this was as prevalent then as it is now, but did you ever have any situations where people just refused to give you what you needed during the traffic stop?
You know, it didn't happen as often as it does now. I mean, most of the times if they didn't want to show something, it's because they didn't have it. But it seems a lot more prevalent today than it did when I was working.
So when you're watching these videos, and I mean, we can use the example of someone just refusing to identify themselves or give you the driver's license. I mean, to me, it seems like that's not okay. They have to produce that. I mean, am I wrong in that? Is there a time when they wouldn't be, you would not be entitled to receive that as a police officer?
No, because basically when you get your license, I know hardly anybody probably reads all the forms and everything, but you're basically required by law, by that state, to, when you get your license, you're signing saying that you will, relinquish your driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance upon demand by a law enforcement officer or any officer of the court, for that matter.
Does there have to be, and maybe it's case by case or state by state, but are you allowed to ask for someone's ID if you have not witnessed them commit a crime, or if they are not suspected to be part of a crime? Like, where does the line stop as far as you being able to request my identification? Does that make sense?
Definitely. I mean, if you are you talking aside from a traffic stop?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it should be common sense that in a traffic stop, I've done something that you have deemed against the law. But like, if I'm walking down the street and you haven't observed me or you haven't received a call on me, are you legally allowed to ask me for an identification? It wouldn't seem like you would be, but I'm just curious.
Well, I think, of course, it does definitely go by state law or your state and even your department. But I mean, an officer can walk up and say, they can ask for it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to give it to them. You can say, I respectfully decline. Now, if they're responding to an incident and you happen to be in that area, then conducting as part of an investigation, then depends on the state, then you would be required to identify yourself. Just mainly, and a lot of times people will ask, well, am I committing a crime? Well, no, not necessarily. If you're not doing anything, if you're just walking down the street, but say, for example, you're walking down the street and there's, you know, a convenience store gets robbed or something like that, and police respond, then as course of the call, you know, you may be a witness that might need to contact later, or you may be a potential offender. So in those cases, you're definitely, because in the course of that investigation, you'd be required to give some kind of identification.
I feel like more and more lately, there are so many videos of people just refusing and saying I know my rights and I don't have to give you this. Of course, I don't think that's true. I'm curious to know where did that idea come from? That why would they think they don't have to identify themselves when you are conducting a stop? Are there any times where they wouldn't have to identify themselves in a traffic stop where they get that misconception from? I don't understand the logic.
Well, I think what you may be referring to is a lot of times a person, I won't say any specific group or anything, but I'm just saying that a person may say, you know, I'm traveling as opposed to driving, and I'm not operating a commercial vehicle, so I don't have to have a license. I don't have to show you my paperwork. Well, that's been traveling is. And the research I did, traveling refers to the fact that you, it's basically protects freedom of movement between states, not unregulated operation of a motor vehicle on public roads. So once, you know, if you're on the public roads, you're required to, if you're operating a motor vehicle, no matter what you're, it doesn't matter if you're saying you're driving, operating, what have you. If you're operating a vehicle on that public highway, then you're required to have a driver's license.
Yeah, I do want to mention a specific group of people, because I'll see all the time, like, they'll say, oh, I'm a sovereign citizen. I'm not required to show you. So I guess talk to me like I'm five and tell me, what is a sovereign citizen, and are they legitimately protected by some kind of the ability not to show you their license?
A sovereign citizen, I'm not totally clued in on exactly what all they believe in, but they seem to all have a common thread that they can drive without a license or registration, or your vehicle being registered currently. From the videos I've seen, they like to quote U.S. codes that pertain to traveling. What I'm seeing from the research I've done is that there's a couple of case law that were from the Supreme Court. It was Kent versus Dulles in 1958, and I believe it's pronounced Sands versus Roe in 1999. Can't recognize the right to travel as part of liberty, quote unquote, under the Fifth Amendment, and then Sands reaffirmed it under the 14th Amendment. And what they held was that the constitutional right to travel means freedom of movement and migration, not the right to drive without a license. And I believe a quote in the decision was, the right to travel is part of the liberty of which the citizen cannot be deprived without due process of law. So basically, the talking point would be, the right to travel does not equal a right to drive. Driving on public roads is a regulated privilege under state law. And so no matter what, like if you come up onto a traffic stop and they're not willing to show you that, then they're breaking the law. And one thing I wanted to kind of mention as far as, you know, on a traffic stop, a lot of times they will say, well, what crime have I committed? And I think there's a misconception from social media that that traffic infractions are not, you know, like breaking the law or committing a crime, which technically they are. If you look in a state statute, traffic violations are the same as any other law. You cannot speed over a certain miles per hour. That's a law. That's a crime. If you break that law, you've committed a crime. So that's why they're investigating that crime. And you're required to show ID. So, that's a lot of the arguing and things that I see on there. The place to argue whether or not you committed a crime or not, that's done in the courts.
Right.
And that's why so many people are getting, you know, which one of the reasons why I wanted to come on, and I appreciate it, is the fact that I see people getting their windows broken and people getting, because they're just basically, I'm sorry to say it, it's ignorance of the law. And a traffic citation is your promise to appear. So it's basically like a reconnaissance bond, saying that you're going to show up. It's free. It's a free bond, basically. So if you want to fight that ticket, you're by every right. I used to tell people that on stops all the time. If you want to come in and present your case, then you need to do it in the court of law, not out on the side of a road, because that's an officer safety issue. That's a driver issue. It's a passenger issue. And that's not the place to do it.
I feel like the language used when you get a ticket is this is not an admission of guilt by having you sign this. It's saying that you're aware of your court date or your duty to appear if you would like. So I've seen so many videos of people refusing to give the cop or the officer their identification until the officer makes them aware of whatever crime they've committed or what traffic offense they've committed. And in every single one of those videos, the officer's response is, "I will tell you that information as soon as I have your identification." So
yeah,
that seems to be the normal operating procedures, that we're going to talk about what I'm stopping you for eventually, but right now I need your identification. For me, just off the street, I feel like that is so for your safety as an officer, you know, whether or not you're talking to a law abiding citizen or someone who has 14 felony warrants for their arrest for aggravated assault on a police officer. Am I correct in that thinking, or are there other reasons why you would want their identification before you get into the reason of the stop?
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct. You definitely brought up the officer safety angle. Officer injuries, death, you just do not know what you're coming upon when you pull someone over. You don't know if they're just having a normal day or did they just have a domestic violence situation that they're running away from. Traffic stops are among the most dangerous and result in the most injuries to officers. Ranking up there with warrant, presenting a warrant or in custody issues or domestic violence, it's right up there. So when you're an officer, if you pull up, the passenger and driver, or the driver and passenger, I'm sorry, might just be having a regular day, you know, and this is the worst part of their day. But to an officer, you have no idea what you're going up upon. That's why you have to use every bit of your training, and you have to do the same thing over and over again to train in your training to make sure it's safe for you, make sure it's safe for the passengers. And, you know, you're dealing with environmental factors, you're dealing with, road factors, time of day or night. If it's at night, you can't see in that vehicle, you don't know what's going on. And I wanted to go back a little bit to what you mentioned about presenting your ID and knowing who is in the car. There's been so many famous cases of traffic stops that resulted in arrests of people that were very, very bad people. You want to go back to the Timothy McVeigh situation in Oklahoma City. He was pulled over and stopped. And if that officer didn't follow procedures and identify him and everything, the Oklahoma City bomber might have escaped and would have been free.
Right.
Ted Bundy's another one. He was pulled over and found out that I believe that he had warrants out of I want to say Washington, but I might be wrong for that. So, you know, if those traffic stops weren't conducted properly and identification made, those individuals could have gone free.
I've been pulled over a couple of times. Not something I'm proud to admit, but I've been driving for 20 something years. It's bound to happen. I think the first time I was, I had just gotten my license. I was 16 and I kind of did a rolling stop at a stop sign. Mm-hmm. And, I lived in a very small town. So the officer pulled me over. He knew who I was and, asked me if I knew why I was pulled over. And I was like, yeah, I probably didn't stop all the way. And he was super polite. He's like, yeah, we just need to make sure that you, fully stop there. So gave me a warning. I got home, and because it's a small town, my mama already knew because the dispatcher was a friend of my mom's. So she let my mom know. At least that's what my mom told me. Who knows? I was a good boy, and I told her that I got pulled over. I got pulled over one time, and I had a little Ford Ranger pickup truck, and it had the seats in the back that you could sit sideways in.
Yes.
And I was going down a street and I turned into a parking lot and I came out of the parking lot without parking and went the other direction. An officer pulled me over because he said that seemed suspicious. I was like, okay, that's, fair enough. And he's like, he asked me where I was heading to, and I had three other guys with me and I was a 17-year-old boy. I said, I'm going to a Bible study. And he's like, yeah, I've heard that one before. I had a jacket laying in the middle. I didn't have like a middle console for my arm, but I had one in the floor where I could like put my drinks and stuff. So I had a jacket there and he's like, I need you to lift up that jacket for me. And when I did, the only thing there was my Bible. And so he just turned his flashlight off and was like, all right, guys, you all have a good night.
So, yeah. You'd be surprised how many times you hear that. Oh, I'm just going to church.
Yeah. And then you have 14 pounds of marijuana loaded in the trunk. I don't know if you're prepared for this. We didn't talk about it off the air, but do you have any memorable traffic stops? It can be something funny or it can be something serious that happened. I'm just curious if anything comes to mind.
I have a lot of years of looking back on, but yeah, there's been times, you talk about being from a small town. That's where I worked primarily, was a small town of 5,000 people in Nebraska. So you definitely knew everybody. And your busiest nights were always Friday night, Saturday night. That's when the busiest time, because I don't know if you had like a main street that you would drag.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you would go up and down. And I did the same thing, the same streets that I drug Maine as a kid. I was working there as well. And so I kind of used it as a way to present a good foot forward, to interact with people. If I pulled kids over, it was usually for hitting the gas and spinning around a curve or something like that. And with as much traffic as there was on a Friday night, you just want to kind of let them know that we're there and that they shouldn't ought to be doing that. So I would go up, and I remember a time when I pulled a group of kids over, and it was for something like that. It was either they were, when a fishtailed around a corner, or they back then you had your muscle cars and you tried to gun them and spin the tires. And so I pulled them over and I walked up, and it was all kids I knew. I knew their parents. I knew everybody. And it was then it was just when it was probably towards the end of my time, because they had cell phones then. And so I'd walk up there and while I was talking to them and I was checking driver's license, talking to them, and one of their phones went off. and they're all just kind of looking like, who's going to answer this when I'm standing there talking to them. And so I said, would you like me to answer it? You know, I always, you know, you can always say no, you know? So I went up, you know, I asked them, do you want me to talk to them? Do you want me to answer? And they're just like shaking their head. And I'm like, oh, come on. You know, what are they, you know? So finally the driver, who was a young lady that I knew, she kind of sheepishly hands her phone out the window. And so I answer it, and they go, who is this? And I said, well, this is Officer Lennemeyer with McCook Police Department. I said, and they go, oh, Gary. I said, and the mom goes, why are you talking to them? Are you working? And I go, yeah. I said, yeah. I said, they're just being a little bit, you know, speedy tonight. I said, they're not. I kind of was walking back a little bit. I said, they're being very respectful. They're being nice. I said, I'm probably going to let them go with a warning, but I just wanted to say hi.
That's hilarious. I would love to be in that position. That would be, but also as a parent, I hope that I never call my son and hear the voice of a police officer, even if I do know him, you know, no disrespect. Right, just don't, my heart would sink momentarily.
That's why I told them basically right off the bat that, you know, there's no problem. You know, I just, I did click the phone because it was a flip phone. I gave it back to her and I go, I think your mom might want to talk to you.
Yeah. That's called night over, you know, the vibe changed is what the kids would say.
Yeah.
You brought up giving a warning in all the times I've been pulled over, and I say all of them, there's less than probably a handful of times I've been pulled over. The only ticket that I ever got was like my tags were expired and where I had leased the vehicle. I'm in Tennessee. They would, when your tags were about to expire, you'd get a letter in the mail like a month beforehand. Yeah. When I moved to Kentucky, I was leasing a vehicle. So I didn't get a letter. And when they told me they were expired, I was like, man, I never got a letter. Come to find out, when you lease a vehicle in Kentucky, the letter goes to the dealership. So it's the dealership can send that on to you or not. And they didn't. So I had no idea. But anyway, that's the only time I've ever got a ticket. And the ticket was just pay to get your tags renewed or whatever.
Yeah.
But in all the other times, I've always got a warning. And I'm wondering, obviously, you have discretion. You don't have to issue a citation every time you see someone going a mile or two over the speed limit. So I guess I'm just curious, like, what was your criteria for issuing a warning versus you're getting a citation? Was it just based on I guess just go into that for me. What kind of things would factor into that decision for you?
Well, I think when you think of that, you look at a lot of times in the case of a like a mechanical issue, like a taillight out or headlight out or something like that, it was usually a warning. And I tried not to, during that time, I would try not to have it depend on the you know, the attitude of the individual. That's not the way it should be. I tried to stay consistent. If it was a headlight out, something like that, it was usually a warning. Now, if I warned someone before and then some time went by and they just kind of, you know, I see the car again and the same issue is at hand, then it would probably get a citation just because they didn't heed the warning. When you're dealing with speed, it does have a lot to do with discretion. I'm wondering now, you know, back when I was an officer, we didn't have the computerized systems in the car, so I don't know how much leeway that they have with those. If they start one, maybe they have to finish it and do a written warning. I used to do verbal warnings a lot. Yeah, that it had to do a lot with speed. If it was in a criminal area, depending on your state, you know, if you're over, say, for example, if you're over 20 miles an hour, you know, that could be a reckless driving charge. Yeah, I would usually try to give someone the benefit of the doubt when I'm there, because the majority of the people you do come find up with, they're law-abiding citizens, and they're trying to be as relevant, as prudent to the laws as they can. They're trying to be safe. A lot of safety issues, like, that, you know, if you have a careless driving or something like that, the majority of the time, that if I felt it was warranted, then I would issue a citation on that, definitely.
I'm the kind of person that if I were to pull over someone for speeding and it's nothing egregious, like, you know, you're going 7 miles an hour over, I think I am the kind of person that my path would be dictated by how the response is or how that interaction goes. That's just me being honest. I have a story that I thought of, and I wanted to talk to you about it since you're an officer.
Sure.
Have you seen the video that happened probably a year and a half ago? There was a officer that had a car pulled over. It was on a street that had some trees that had a canopy over the road. And while the officer was talking to him, an acorn fell out of a tree and hit the roof of the car and just made a really loud sound. Mm-hmm. And the officer thought that it was a gunshot. So he pulled his weapon and fired into the car. So it was an awful situation. I'm not trying to make light of that. But so that was going viral. And then one night, my son's at a birthday party, and this party's over at like midnight. So I've got to go pick him up. And I'm on this newer road. It's a bypass, and the speed limit's 55, but they really want you to go 70. Is that kind of road. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm going 65.
Flow of traffic.
Yeah. I'm the only car on the road. I'm setting the flow. So I get pulled over going 65, and when I'm seeing the blue lights, I'm just of the mindset of I'm getting a ticket and I deserve it. I'm going 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking to this officer, and it's a pleasant interaction. And as he is taking my license, a leaf from out of nowhere, there are trees around, but they're like 30 yards away from us. But a leaf flies and hits him in the face. And then he like makes that motion with his arm where he's like shooing it away, thinking it was a bug or something. Mm-hmm. And without missing a beat, I just look at him and say, well, thank God it wasn't an acorn. And in that split second before he reacted, I thought that was probably the worst thing I could have said in that moment. But thankfully, he had a sense of humor with him that night, and he laughed. But when he walked off, I thought, oh, my God, I might have just saved myself from getting a ticket. But that could have went so the other way.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, but that's good, though. That was, you know, we get a lot of different responses from people. I know a lot of times if you have, like, I would have a couple in a car, say, and a husband and wife, and I walk up there, and the guy is doing everything right, and his wife, or, you know, is just the time that I thought the wife is just giving him what for, you know. You know, I told you not to speed, you know, yeah. You shouldn't be speeding, and here you are doing it. Now you got pulled over, and now we're going to get a ticket. And you just see him slouching little by little each time. And I'm just like, wow, I can't give this poor guy a ticket. I said to him, man, you're getting it worse than I could ever give you. I said, I'll give you a warning. I said, just be safe. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Bless his heart. He doesn't need any more badness in his life.
Exactly.
Gary, anything else on your mind that you wanted to talk about?
Well, if it's all right, I wanted to kind of talk about there. There was one that I see a lot of times on the videos and whatnot, and people are talking about, why do, when you, you pull somebody over and you go up and you, and an officer will touch the back side bumper or trunk.
I have my thoughts on that, and I wonder if I'm right.
Sure, go ahead.
I always feel like they do that so if the vehicle flees, then that would forensically be able to put your fingerprint on it, or if you get hurt. I don't know. I've always just thought that it's either if you were, as an officer, were to get hurt, that's a way for your evidence to be on their car. That's kind of how I've thought of it. What is it really, though?
Well, the way I was always trained, you, like I said before, you go over everything the same for your safety. What we were done, what we were taught was you do that, you pull up on the back, the trunk. You would pull up on it to make sure that it's not open to where there might be somebody hiding in it.
Oh, so it's not just touching. I always thought you all were touching the taillight, but you're actually lifting up on the trunk to make sure it's not open. I got you. Okay. That makes sense.
Now I always thought about, cause I've heard a lot of people say the same thing you have, that it's for DNA purposes and fingerprints. And I'm just wondering, as far as how, I'm not a DNA expert, so I can't speak to this, but I'm just wondering if, because of environmental issues, if just how long it would stay.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it would be contaminated fairly quickly on the outside, but maybe that's how they teach it now. But that's how it was always taught in the beginning, is you walk up, you position your vehicle a certain way so the engine block is towards the pulled over vehicle. So in case there is a gunfire, you have a cover. The engine block will stop a pretty big round. You walk up, you're always looking around at what's going on. But yeah, one of the first things you do is you just kind of pull up on the trunk lid to make sure that, now in the days that now of excuse me, of having the fact that you can open your trunk from the inside.
Yep.
So, you know, but at least at that time, you know that but you can hear that click when they push the button.
I don't know if you're allowed to talk about it, but I've always wondered, when I've been pulled over at night, I've noticed that officers always have a spotlight, and mm-hmm. I feel like it's always positioned to where it's bright lighting my side mirror. And I've wondered if it's for your benefit in some way, where it will let you see inside their car, like my car, better, or is it to where I can't see you because I'm blinded by that light and I don't really know where you are?
It's both. It's a little of both. Having the spotlight on. And you're absolutely correct. It'll hit right onto the spotlight, or it'll hit right on the side view mirror, because it will not only glance off of that, go into it, but it'll also illuminate the inside.
I was wondering if it did that for you. Like, yeah, does it bounce into my car and make it a little easier on you to see in?
Yeah, and it's totally for like a temporary disorientation, because you want to have it, at night, you want to have a tactical advantage when you're walking up there.
Yep.
Something I've noticed, unfortunately, I've witnessed this personally by being pulled over, is that a lot more officers now walk up to the passenger side window.
Yeah.
And that's great. I used to do that usually only when the traffic was really bad, but otherwise we would pull up to the driver's side. But having those lights on there will not only illuminate the vehicle, but it's definitely for us as a safety issue at night too. It's the same reason why you walk up with a flashlight. When I was an officer, I carried a 4-cell mag light.
Yep.
And that thing was almost rivaled a spotlight. So you know, and just having that on, you wouldn't necessarily even have to, you know, shine it in somebody's eyes, you know. I wouldn't do that if things were going well. But, you know, if you're first looking up there, you know, it's going to disorient a little bit, and it's going to give you a little bit of a tactical advantage at that point, because a lot of times when you're walking up, a lot of instances of gunfire is going to happen fairly quickly. It's like when you first pull up, they're going to jump out and start firing. So you want to have any kind of tactical advantage that you can have.
I had some friends in the military, and they described their time of deployment as a constant state of suspicious alertness. And unfortunately, I think that's what you have to do every time you pull somebody over. I would even say that even if the first interaction that you have kind of sets the stage that, okay, this is going to be, I can put my guard down a little bit. You can't nowadays, you know. Even I think you guys are like walking human lie detectors. You know how the interaction is going to go pretty much from the start. But I've seen some videos where you would think everything is going great, and then it just turns to crap pretty quickly. So it has to be one of the most dangerous jobs, because you just never know what you're pulling up on.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And that's when your training and experience has to come into play. Yeah, that was another thing that I really wanted to stress, that I hope can be kind of a PSA, is that they're not being, an officer on a traffic stop is not being trying to be rude or mean by what they do. It's just their thinking is, I'm going home at the end of the shift.
Yep.
Because I have a family and friends and people I love that are depending on me to come home at the end of the shift. And I'm going to do everything in my power to accomplish that. And it's like you said, things can be going great, and all of a sudden everything can go terribly wrong in a hurry. So as experience comes with, you do get a kind of a, what do I want to say? A sixth sense, as you are, you know, about something. You as you're walking up something just doesn't feel right. You know, you don't use that as an excuse to pull somebody out on the ground and throw them down or anything, but you get a heightened, you definitely get a heightened awareness, you know, like you said. So I hope people can understand that when an officer is walking out there, that he's just doing the best he can to keep him or herself safe, and also their safety.
Yeah, there's a lot more questions I want to ask.
Sure.
You brought up, you know, you never want to just initially pull someone out of a car. Obviously, there's going to be times where they're doing something, or they're fidgeting, or there's like four people in one car. I don't know. There's different times where you, as an officer, would have to pull someone out. Is that kind of up to your discretion as well? I mean, if you feel the need to, are you within your rights to do that? Or is there ever a time where you would get in trouble if it wasn't justified, I guess, or is it always kind of at your discretion?
And yes, that's a big issue that I've seen a lot of times too, is with, you know, can they make me get out of a car or a vehicle? Can they make me get out of a vehicle? And there was a pretty famous Supreme Court ruling, Pennsylvania versus Mims, that said that any time an officer can order a person, and that includes passengers as well. And that was under Brenlin versus California. It said passengers are also detained as well as a driver while they're in the vehicle. So they can be, anytime an officer, they deem it for officers that an officer can remove people from the vehicle for their safety. So yeah, you can do it at any point. and you don't need like a reasonable articulable fact. I never could say that right. Suspicion. I usually just said RAS, but yeah, if you're feeling like you need to take them out, to have them get out, then you're allowed to.
I have one more misconception that I would like to ask you about, and that is, if you were to have pulled me over and you have, maybe you pulled me over for a broken taillight, but then you smell, the presence of marijuana.
Okay.
Then at that point, you would have, am I correct in saying that you as an officer would have reasonable suspicion to detain me and search that car without my consent?
That would give you, definitely it would give you reason to get out of, to take him out of the vehicle. Now, that, and this depends a lot on state statutes as well, but I think to do a search, I think you would need to have just the smell. That gives you reason to investigate further. I mean, that if you're taking them out of the car and a joint drops out of their, from their lap onto the ground, then that gives you consent. Okay. Because then you can have them arrested. If that's against the law, a lot of states, that's not against the law.
So yeah. And I was going to say in Kentucky, it's against the law to even,
okay.
So I know where you are is probably even recreationally legal, but yeah. Here in Kentucky, it's not. So perhaps that wasn't the best. I just wondered, at what point do you have probable cause enough to warrant a search, even if they say they would not give you consent?
Now, for in Kentucky, if that's an arrestable offense to where you're in possession, then you can, pursuant to arrest, you can do a search. I generally, and that would be just the common areas, the areas that you can visibly see. If you felt more warranted, you could actually, secure the vehicle and get a warrant, which would be, in today's world, I would probably go with that, because you'd want to have, do a full search.
So that was really a setup for my real question. So I've seen so many videos, like on Live Police or old school cops videos, where mm-hmm. maybe there isn't something just glaring. Maybe there's not a needle laying on the seat or the smell of a drug that has been smoked, but maybe just in the line of questioning about, where are they going and what are you doing? This kind of stuff. Maybe you just get a sense that there's something more going on, but there's no like glaring evidence. So you would want to do a search. So you have to ask for their consent, and, mm-hmm. and they have the right to say no. And you don't have a justifiable reason to do so. That's often when a canine unit is called. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, I've always heard that if the canine unit was going to take 20 minutes to get there, then can you detain a person that long? Like, is there a limit on how long you could detain a person to allow time for a canine to walk the perimeter of the vehicle to get a hit?
Yeah, that's when it gets really dicey, because I believe most of the courts have ruled that a reasonable amount of time has to, you have to have one respond within a reasonable amount of time. Now, how long that is depends on what the situation is. As far as searches of vehicles go, it's a lot different today. I think in a prior episode that we did, we talked about how people are more knowledgeable of the laws now and what their rights, what they can do and what they can't do. Back in when I was working, you had 99%, or maybe 95% of the time you asked to do a search, they would let you, they would consent. More or less for because they either didn't have anything or they didn't think you were going to find anything.
Right.
So I used to, you know, I used to just ask because there's nothing against the law in asking. So, and if they give consent, then you know, you have that to do that. So as far as with a canine, I believe it's normally, and I know it's a very vague answer to your question, but it's usually if you're waiting 20 minutes, get a dog out. I think you have to have a lot more than just a suspicion. You have to have, you know, either that or you need to get them out there fast.
Right. Yeah, I've always heard it described like that. It has to be a reasonable amount of time, and that's so subjective. I just wondered if that was really what the law was or if that's just what I've heard, but it sounds like that's the rule. So very interesting.
Well, yeah, Gary, it depends. I don't think they want to give a set time because it all depends on the situation.
Yeah. If you think I have 40 pounds of marijuana, you don't want to be against the clock if it's, you know, a minute past it and the canine could have been there, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, you can't expect someone to sit there for 30 minutes if you don't really have a good reason to search.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you have that suspicion, you should get right away and get somebody out there. And you could, you know, you could be writing the ticket while that's going on, what have you.
Yep. Well, Gary, man, I appreciate it. We've been on here for a while, so I'm gonna just say thank you for your time tonight. And of course, I know it's not the easiest to track us down and to nail us both down, but keep trying. I'd love to chat again the next time you have something interesting you want like to talk about.
Well, I definitely hope it was interesting for your listeners, and I always thoroughly enjoy talking to you, John, and Jamie too. And tell him hi for me. And you know, anytime you have anything that you're not sure of, or like if you're looking at an episode and say, you know, I wonder, you know, let me know. Give me a holler, and I'll be glad to come on. We can talk about it.
Absolutely. Well, Gary, thank you so much, and I know I had a good time, and I'm sure our listeners will as well.
Well, I sure did too. I had fun. Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.